Hi, everyone, and welcome to First State Insights, a podcast presented by the University of Delaware's Institute for Public Administration. That's IPA for short. My name is Troy Mix. I'm Associate Director at IPA and your host for this episode. My guest today is Tom DeWire. For more than two decades, Tom has worked with states, districts, schools, and education-focused organizations to get better student results through a focus on effective implementation. After earning a Master of Public Administration degree from the University of Delaware's Biden School of Public Policy and Administration, Tom worked on systems change efforts in Baltimore City Public Schools and led consulting engagements at the U.S. Education Delivery Institute. In 2016, he founded the education consulting firm EdScale LLC. On January 23, 2024, I spoke with Tom about his recently released book, How to Implement Just About Anything, his perspectives on the challenges associated with implementation, and lessons learned on how to drive and sustain change in complex systems. Let's get to the conversation. Tom, thanks for joining me this morning.
Happy to be here.
So congratulations on the book, How to Implement Just About Anything. I read it. I really enjoyed it. It kind of spoke to me in the work that I am engaged in. I imagine you must think implementation is really important. I'm going to take that as a foregone conclusion. You don't need to answer that. And then I'm curious for you in your career, what was the light bulb moment or sets of moments maybe that made it clear to you that implementation is really important?
I think for me, implementation is really about almost like running campaigns, but you're running a campaign for change. So it's about getting buy-in, staying focused on the goal, and getting clear on how to get there. I had a few light bulb moments. I'll tell you about one. So I had the opportunity to work for the Baltimore City Public Schools for 6 years after working for then Mayor O'Malley in Baltimore City. And at the school system, there was one kind of early project that made it clear for me that implementation was key. It was about student immunization. So in June of 2006, there were new regulations from the state of Maryland that increased immunization requirements for students. It wasn't that students just needed one shot, though. They needed a series of shots spaced out in a certain number of months. It was quite a challenge. We went from under 200 students not fully vaccinated to almost 24,000. And again, immunization was a key piece of eligibility for school-based funding. So the complicating challenge was that dynamic around who needed what and how many months apart. I worked at the district in the school stat operation. It was a data-driven team supporting key implementation of strategies. And it was based in many ways on Mayor O'Malley's use of data and deployment of real-time resources he modeled after some work in New York City. So July 2006, we had 24,000 students that needed shots. By October of 2007, over 10,000 students had received shots. And then a year later, October 2008, we were down to under 500 students. So the real question is kind of what made that possible? And I think that was where the light bulb moment went off for me. There were a couple of things. We had alignment of the goals at the top. We had a willingness to apply resources, get access to free shots. We asked for a policy waiver from the state in order to allow us to have more time because of how challenging of a hill we had to climb. We had strong and real-time data. We knew which students needed what. We had direct links and communication to parents and families, right? So we could go kind of direct to the folks that needed to take action and provide them with support. We had strong support with school secretaries, right? They're really the front lines in the main office. They're where the questions come. They're the ones that update the data systems. The other thing is that we had a guiding coalition with the Baltimore City Health Commissioner, the city school CEO, city school's chief of staff, other key community partners. And then we had a really clear kind of implementation team and linkage to classrooms and schools. So we had principal supervisors, principals, the technology team of the district with student information systems, robocalling, letters, immunization reporting. You know, all of this, of course, was then championed by a lead staff person at the district office. Immunization is actually a lot more straightforward than most change efforts and most improvement efforts in a school district. But I had a real insight on how these tools and approaches could be helpful in improving learning and improving education for students. And so at the time when I was in the district in Baltimore City for 6 years, I was part of a team where we delivered some pretty incredible results. We had a 41% decrease in suspensions, a 21% decrease in truancy, substantial increases in the graduation rate, and the lowest dropout rate in more than 10 years. And so, it, you know, 200 schools, lots of people involved in that for effort, but it was a real coming together of what could be accomplished.
What made it the right time for you to kind of take what you've learned in your career so far and learn from others and distill it into a book?
We have a big opportunity now, Troy. We learned a lot through the pandemic. We innovated. We've invested funds at the national level through recovery. In Delaware now, you know, we're really looking at what has had an impact through Delaware was one of the first states to implement Race to the Top. Delaware invested funds pretty strategically through the recovery. And now we're looking at, you know, what's the impact and what should be sustained. In Maryland, where I live, there's a massive investment in public education right now. The state has put in place investing $3.8 billion additional dollars over the next 10 years. And so kind of both in Delaware and Maryland, where I do the majority of my work, the implementation is really critical during times of change. I think the challenge is that we tend to overcomplicate implementation. Our education system in the U.S. is quite complex and quite dispersed in terms of ownership and influence. And so that tends to cause us to overcomplicate what implementation might need to look like. So I really wrote the book for my current clients in Maryland and Delaware, thinking about the lessons and things that have resonated with them in their implementation. I hope it's valuable to others. Of course, it's not just my perspective and the work. I leveraged some of the lessons of many great leaders like Edward Deming, who did the Plan, Do, Study, Act framework. It's similar to the delivery framework from Michael Barber, the STAT framework that Martin O'Malley embraced. And then there are organizations like the Carnegie Foundation that embraces improvement science. And then there are others outside of education, like the Institute for Healthcare Improvement has been a kind of mainstay in this space for many years and a group I look to for innovation.
One of the things I like about the book is it's dense, short enough you can dive in and read and remind yourself about the particular lessons you lay out, which you lay out four lessons. So I wonder if you could kind of take us through a high-level overview of what those four lessons are.
Yeah, I'd love to, Troy. I think one of the superpowers and biggest values that I and EdScale bring to partners is to help distill some of that complexity. You know, the book is short. It reflects our style and approach, and again, attempts to distill the complexity, but you have got enough to run with it and apply things. So there are four lessons in the book. I'll talk through it really briefly, and then I'd love to tell a few stories. First lesson is beware of fat plans. It's borrowed from Michael Follin. Really, it's about not a kitchen sink approach to strategic plan, but what are the 3 to 7 key priorities for change and improvement. Lesson two is about having the right people and skills involved. And so it's both a guiding coalition that advocates and supports for the work across the state or across the district. And then it has an implementation team that are the folks on the ground at the state, in districts, in schools, in classrooms, really implementing the work and providing feedback. Lesson three is around diving in. And sometimes we get stuck in planning mode and plan and plan and plan. The challenge is that we're guaranteed to be wrong. We're just not good at prediction and planning as human beings. Our best case scenario is with weather prediction, and we're really not that great. I think we're 50% accurate 2 or 3 days out, right? So the idea is like, yes, plans are important. We want to know strategically where we're headed, but many times we learn through an implementation. So let's get going, right? So let's use the pilots and other mechanisms. And then lesson four is about being consistent. In implementation, there's a thing called an implementation dip. You get started, you've got early momentum, and then it wears off and everybody's looking around thinking, is this having the impact we expected? So part of being consistent is following the research, sticking with implementation, and really being deliberate about whether we're having an impact or not, and whether we need to change or not. Taking that pause to give time, 3 to 5 years, for things to really evolve.
I'm smiling as we talk because these are real key lessons that I've experienced in good ways and bad ways in projects I'm involved with. And I could probably just bend your ear and tell some stories about those, but I'm curious, like, what stories you have for good or bad that kind of reinforce those lessons.
Well, I'm gonna stick with the good and go for leveraging the bright spots, but I've also got some plenty of war stories in terms of things gone sideways. There was a small team that I used to work with where we were essentially the fixers. So we were brought in to fix things when they went sideways. So I've got plenty of those, but let me share a couple bright spots of stories. So Delaware is a national leader in career readiness. I believe it was Governor Markell that first established Delaware's promise to have 65% of the workforce having a college degree or professional certificate by 2025, which is soon approaching. I had the opportunity to partner with the Delaware Pathways Initiative in 2006. We built a strategic plan with 5 key levers and partners. That was the Delaware Department of Ed, it was Del Tech, the Community College, the Department of Labor, the Workforce Development Board, and then community partners, including United Way and Rodell. A lot of people were involved, the state, district, superintendents, school leaders, right? But through those efforts, there was were additional $22 million invested since 2016. And we saw really good outcomes. We went from 82 to 104 middle school and high schools involved in the pathways. These are kind of CTE or career pathways. Pathway programs currently enroll over 30,000 students, or 65% of public high school students. These students have a 96% on-time graduation rate. And then pathway students constitute 79% of the high school seniors who met the college and career metric during school year 21-22, right? So expansion and opportunity for all students, success of students who are in CTE and career pathways, and then, you know, a large 79% of high school seniors were achieving the kind of benchmark for graduation, right, in the state. And Pathways 2.0 launched in about a year and a half ago, and that's looking to expand this work into middle schools to reach about 6,000 more students and then continue to grow the work in high schools. You know, there were key partners involved. There was a really short plan. We had routines, quarterly reviews of progress that happened. We had clear metrics of success and an annual report that was released, and a lot of national support and reports that were written in support of it. So I think that's really one local and exciting education example. In the case in Delaware, we didn't have all the answers, but we had a clear strategy, right? There are other times we don't know what the strategy is. Jerry Sternum is one of the founders of Save the Children. And in his early years, he was in Vietnam trying to help support an effort around child reducing or ending child malnutrition. And he leveraged this idea of obsessing about success, right? And so he was told, you know, with child malnutrition, there are all these intractable challenges: abject poverty, lack of access to clean water and food, lack of access to education, all these things that were just massive systemic problems. And he said, okay, well, let's go to a village. And he went to the village and he talked to some of the key stakeholders and said, are there any children in this village who are well-nourished? In fact, there were. So we talked to those mothers. So I'll zoom ahead. And essentially, in the end, they were able to reach 2.2 million young people in 265 villages through mother-to-mother cooking classes, right? So if we don't know the answer, usually there's a bright spot. Usually there's a place where it's working, whether in our state, in another state, in another part of the world, in another, you know, context. So that's why I look a lot outside of education for insights around implementation. But we know how to really leverage positive outliers in the data and get better results. And so that guiding coalition of moms, right, was really important to advise and inform the strategy. And that's whether it's a formal group or an informal group of loose affiliations and connections, which is, you know, Delaware, I think, has a lot of strength in. That's a key piece of both sustaining an effort over time and innovation. So I'll tell one more story. Since 2019, I've had the opportunity to work in the Baltimore City Public Schools with their multilingual learner team. So it's supporting students for whom English is a second language. So they're working on English language acquisition. The challenge in Baltimore is that their English language learner population has grown significantly over the last 5 years. It's pretty much doubled. So they need to shift the school system as a whole from targeted support to a systemic support model. We helped build their strategic plan around 6 goals. But one of the most exciting parts of that effort for me has been a network of 11 schools that represent over 50% of the multilingual learners in grades K through 8. So the idea is that if we get it right in those schools and see significant improvement, the lessons can cascade and support the systemic work in the district. And so we've seen a lot of good results there and continue to see improvement. But we've really anchored that work around 5 instructional practices. There's a coach in every building. Those coaches come together twice a month to share learnings, to do learning walks in each other's schools. We engage the school leaders once a month in that work. And so we're both building the capacity of kind of teachers through the coaching process, but also building capacity of leadership teams in those buildings. And then those school leaders are influencing their peers across the district. So we're really, it's an opportunity where we got clear on strategy. We have reviews, regular quarterly reviews in place, both at the school and district level. And then schools actually have 90-day plans. They're really clear on which of the 5 practices they're focused on improving so we can drive some shared learning. And then they evaluate it mid-year and make plans for the second half of the year. So that Baltimore City example is really about lesson 3, where it's getting that balance of support and accountability right, leading with support and driving learning. It's about having really clear feedback loops in place and then celebrating the heck out of lessons that are happening in classrooms and in schools with those early adopters.
So you didn't know going in what was going to work or even what the strategy was across the whole system. You needed to figure it out as you dove in, so to speak.
We had research-based strategies, but even when you have those, you have to adapt them to the local context, right? And so where do you have that flexibility to understand an individual school's culture and adapt it to the resources and expertise in the building, right? And so that's part of, frankly, the excitement of implementation and the challenge, right? It's very local, and you need to get that flexibility right, but stay true to the core efforts and strategies that are going to have the biggest impact. The last part, I'll just share 2 quotes on lesson 4 about being consistent. So there's a great marathoner, Eliud Kipchoge, who's probably or arguably the best marathoner ever. And he told the New York Times last year that he rarely, if ever, pushes himself past 80 or 90% effort during his workouts. And he does this, it allows him to string together weeks and weeks of consistent training, right? And so there's a book called Peak Performance written by a psychologist and a former Nike athlete who happened to be the whistleblower on the Nike doping scheme. But the quote in there is that consistency compounds. Small steps repeated over and over again lead to big gains. Don't aim to be consistently great. Aim to be great at being consistent. Be good enough over and over again. Change efforts are hard. Bureaucracies are built to sustain change efforts, to resist change efforts. And so being consistent and having a aligned and coherent strategy is critical to getting better results for students in schools and really better results across government generally.
I had the chance to take the implementation scorecard quiz that you point to in the book and is on your EdScale website. And it's on point with a lot of the lessons in terms of the challenges I feel with this particular project, which is we have a pretty fat plan because we have a ambitious scope. We, you know, have periodic dips in implementation energy, let's call it. You used a different phrase, but yeah. We try to be consistent, but it's tough to be consistently great across this big scope. Uh-huh. And we've had a couple team, you know, meetings and workshops where we've tried to focus in a little more, but the quiz brought me back to, you need to work on the fat plans component and dive into that part. So I guess if you could just give a little quick coaching on what you would advise generally on if you're dealing with a huge scope, if you're dealing with a bloated plan, how do you start to get it under control?
Let me ask one or two quick questions. Is this a newer project?
It's a year and a half old, but a new type of project.
All encompassing
in ways that others aren't.
Yeah. Yep. That's what it seemed like based on some of your responses. I think there's a few connected actions across these lessons that I'd encourage you to play with. So in trying to distill some of the complexity, there's a question I typically come back to, and it's what's one thing you can do that makes everything else easier and impactful, right? Because it's not always, there are keystone behaviors in habit formation that make everything easier. It's the same in managing a big project or a big initiative or change effort. So across the, as I looked at your ratings across the four lessons, there were four questions that stood up. One was getting clear on the goals, right? So if you can get clarity on what we're trying to achieve and a little bit of the strategy too, but really on what we're trying to achieve, it makes everything else, that creates the North Star. So I think there's an opportunity there. The second is that leveraging a guiding coalition builds in regular feedback and gives you a mirror to reflect how you can distill some of the complexity. So I think having a guiding coalition and then activating them in some sort of quarterly routine. So there's not just your team. It's the, I don't need to know more about the project, but maybe there are key stakeholders across the state that are both the recipients of the work or are engaged in framing and shaping the work. I think having a forced mechanism to have that conversation with them will enable some of that clarity and some of that performance project management to happen more naturally. So those routines, essentially those guiding coalition meetings, quarterly or a couple times a year, are a forcing mechanism to then step back and say, how are we doing across the big buckets in this project? What do we need to share with the guiding coalition? What do we need to ask them for feedback and advice around? So that it's not just, the project leader who's beating the drum and saying, we've got to do this. We've got some skin in the game and some light public accountability. And the cool thing is that if you have the right guiding coalition, they're actually going to help you solve the complexity problem.
I mean, there's reasons that corporations have boards of directors, I guess, for example. But I can say, from my experience, it's so easy to avoid that forcing mechanisms. It's so easy to say we don't want that feedback, but obviously it's pretty critical, or it can be really critical.
I think in my experience, amongst the complexity and the mix of kind of urgent actions and strategic actions, this guiding coalition concept and quarterly routines is the first thing to get lost, even for me.
Quarterly,
with most of my partners, we're either 3 to 4 times a year, we're coming together to say, you essentially are going up on the balcony and looking down on the planet and saying, are we on track? Right. And there's a kind of different tools in the book, reference in the book to help get a shared view of progress, which then allows you to have the right conversations, both to celebrate the things that are working, what you can scale and sustain, and then also problem solve the things that need attention. Right. And I think amongst the week to week, day to day, we can kind of lose some of that big picture strategy stuff. So that's the biggest value. And having a little bit of accountability board, I think forces is just another lever to say, yep, we got to do this. It's coming up in a month. I found that's really helpful with implementation teams.
So we have a similar enough background in that we were classmates in the Master of Public Administration program at the Biden School at UD. Putting your student hat on again, thinking about when we were in the classroom, so to speak, and what you've learned since then about implementation. What advice would you give to new practitioners, students, when it comes to learning about and improving implementation?
Yeah, I think we spent many hours sitting near each other, Troy, IPA. So I know part of the approach I take now is because of some of your influence. But I think what drew me to our graduate program at the Biden School was really the hands-on experience, right? So while in grad school, I worked 20 hours a week over 2 years, rotating through 4 different experiences, 2 at the university, 1 at the state, and 1 in the state legislature. I learned a ton about government management that continues to be part of how I think about and support partners today. I think my advice would be, you know, really dive in and be deliberate about any work and internship experiences you may have during grad school as much as you are with your coursework. I learn by doing. I have to fail in practice in order to then kind of understand how to approach it next time. I think the second, of course, is to not make implementation an afterthought, right? Play out this concept of a delivery chain. What are the linkages between the organization you're in and the end user, right? Who are the key players? What are the current relationships, their current capacity? What shifts are going to be needed? Who's going to have to do things differently? And are we clear on what good practice looks like? I think to me, in education, it always comes back to one simple question. What would my mom, a lifelong educator, say?
And how can folks now learn more about your work and keep in touch with what you're up to?
Well, folks should definitely buy the book. It's on Amazon. It was number one new release in education administration. And then I think, you know, you mentioned reference the implementation quiz on my website. It's free. I'd encourage folks to take about, you know, 4 or 5 minutes to take the quiz. There's an implementation workbook that goes along with the book. It's also free on my website. We have a monthly newsletter that shares stories of implementation and lessons in leadership. And then, you know, folks can reach out. My team and I are always looking for leaders going after ambitious goals for students to support. The website is www.edscalellc.com, or they can just search EdScale in their favorite web browser.
Well, thanks, Tom. And I would say, you know, the book definitely worth checking out, How to Implement Just About Anything. I know I've read a lot of books around this topic, and it's a great distillation. It's a great pick up and read and say, oh yeah, I should try this. I should tweak that. So worth checking out for folks in this business for sure. And Tom, just want to thank you for reconnecting here and taking time to join me today.
It's been great, Troy. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening today. To learn more about Tom and his work, visit EdScale on the web at edscalellc.com. You can also look for his book, How to Implement Just About Anything, on Amazon. For more on the Institute for Public Administration, visit ipa.udel.edu. If you enjoyed this episode, look for past and future episodes of First State Insights wherever you get podcasts. I hope you'll tune in again soon. Take care.